வக்ரதுண்ட மகாகாய சூர்யகோடி சமப்ரபா நிர்விக்னம் குரு மே தேவ சர்வகாரியேஷு சர்வதா சிவசக்த்யா யுக்தோ யதி பவதி சக்தஹ ப்ரபவிதும் நச்சே தேவம் தேவோ நகலு குஷலஹ ஸ்பந்திதுமபி அதஸ்த்வாமாராத்யா ஹரிஹர விரிஞ்சாதிபிரபி ப்ரணந்தும் ஸ்தோதும் வா கதமக்ருத புண்யஹ ப்ரபவதி.
Om Sri Sai Ram. At the outset, my most loving and prayerful salutations at the divine lotus feet of our most beloved Bhagwan, Sri Satya Sai Baba. Dear listener, you are tuned to Radio Sai Global Harmony on Asia Stream, bringing you 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, the love and the message of Bhagwan Sri Satya Sai Baba. Good morning. Greetings and loving Sai Ram on this Thursday on the 28th of May 2020, and with me Team Radio Sai Sunil welcoming you to this morning's segment Divine Glory on Thursday Live from Prashanti Nilayam. Let me first read out to you today's Sai Inspires message. What is the most important virtue we must practice to experience God within and all around us? Bhagwan reminds us today, and I quote, "When what really exists is only one, there is no room for any difference in attitudes. The same life force that is present in an elephant is also present in a dog or in a cow. Since this life force present in all jivas is one and the same, we observe that everything is an aspect of the divine. So long as you have the feeling of ownership or keep saying, 'Mine, mine, mine,' you will not have a chance to observe things other than yours. As long as you have this attitude, you will never be able to understand what is not yours. On the day when you give up this idea, you will really understand this aspect of equanimity. You must reduce your attachment to things. So long as jealousy and ego are uppermost in your mind, God will be at a distance from you. When you're able to get rid of these qualities, God will come close to you." Unquote. This was taken from chapter 21 from Summer Showers in Vrindavan, 1978. Dear listener, today the world is continuing with lockdowns and social distancing due to the spread of the coronavirus disease, or the COVID-19. And let us all take all the precautions mandated by the government and the health department, and also maintain personal and community hygiene. Also, let us continue to engage in prayers at our own places for world peace. Talking about prayers, let me now play for you a mantra or a verse from the Krishna Yajurveda Taittiriya Aranyaka. And the efficacy of this mantra is in destroying all the germs and viruses. Just to give you a gist of the meaning of this mantra, Let me read out the meaning. O germ, I kill you with this mantra revealed by rishis Atri, Kanva and Jamadagni. Through this mantra, the leader of the germs is killed. The rest of the leaders of the germ clan also will be killed similarly. The mother and the father of the germs are destroyed. All types of germs, whether big or small, black or white, are also killed. The germs lying within the bodies of animals are also killed. Likewise, this mantra keeps all germ enemies stuck within Yama's teeth, and the crushing sound of them being killed in his mouth can be heard. Om, peace, peace, peace. Let's now listen to the mantra.
Om Atrinatva Krime Hanmi Kanvena Jamadagnina Vishvavaso Brahmana Hataha Krimina Gumraja Apyesha Vistapatir Hataha Atho Mata Atho Pita Atho Sthura Atho Kshudra Atho Krishna Atho Shveta Atho Ashatika Hata Shveta Bhissaha Sarve Hata Ahara Vadya Shrutasya Havisho Yata Tat Satyam Yadamuyamasya Jambhayo Adadami tadahitate khanpanrasi Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.
Sai Ram, dear listener, this mantra is chanted daily in the morning and evening Mandir prayer sessions here at Prashanti Nilay. And for those of you who don't know, let me tell you that these prayer sessions are streamed live for all to listen on Radio Sai's Prashanti Mandir Live YouTube channel, Sri Satya Sai Baba Facebook page, and of course Radio Sai's Asia stream and Telugu stream at 8 a.m. in the morning and in the evening at 5 p.m. So you could log on at these times. The time right now in our studios is 51 minutes past 9 a.m. That is Indian Standard Time. And today in Divine Glory, I have lined up for you readings from the English version of the holy book Sri Sai Satcharitra, written by Sri Hemant Pant, followed by a conversation from our archives with Dr. Ramanathan Iyer, a senior cardiac surgeon serving for very long at the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Medical Sciences, Prashanti Gram. And in conversation with him is Professor G. Venkatraman, the former Vice Chancellor of the Sri Satya Sai Institute of Higher Learning and also the former Director of Radio Sai. But first, readings from Sri Sai Satcharitra. Sri Sai Satcharitra is an account on the life and teachings of Sai Baba of Shirdi, written by Sri Hemant Pant. We are thankful to Vasanthi Sundaram for reading out the contents from this holy book, and to Veeramani Kannan for the melodious musical support. Wishing you all a happy, holy and blessed Thursday and a wonderful day ahead. Praying to Lord Almighty that the pandemic caused by the coronavirus disease be eradicated and all the suffering come to an end at the earliest. Samasta lokaha sukhino bhavantu.
Chapter 29 Stories of Chennai's Bhajani Mela, Tendulkar's Father and Son, Dr. Captain Hatte, Woman Narvekar. This chapter describes other interesting and wonderful stories of Sai Baba. Chennai's Bhajani Mela. It was in the year 1916 when a Chennai's Bhajani Mela, party of Ramdasi Pant, started on a pilgrimage to the holy city of Banaras. The party consisted of a man, his wife, daughter and sister-in-law. Unfortunately, their names are not mentioned. On their way, the party heard that there lived in Shirdi, Ahmednagar district, a great saint named Sai Baba, who was God-realized and who was very generous and distributed money every day to his bhaktas and to skillful persons who went and showed their talent there. A lot of money in the form of dakshina was collected daily by Sai Baba, and out of this amount, he gave daily 1 rupee to a 3-year girl, Amani, the daughter of a Bhakta Kondaji, and 2 rupees to 5 rupees to Sam, 6 rupees to Jamali, the mother of Amani, and 10 to 20 rupees or even 50 rupees to other Bhaktas as he pleased. On hearing all this, the party came to Shirdi and stayed there. The Mela did very good bhajan and sang very good songs, but inwardly they desired money. 3 of the party were full of avarice, but the lady or mistress was of a very different nature. She had regard and love for Baba. Once it so happened that when the noonday aarti was going on, Baba was much pleased with her faith and devotion and gave her vision of her Ishta deity. To her, Baba appeared as Sitanath, while to others, the usual Sainath. On seeing her beloved deity, she was very much moved. Tears began to flow from her eyes and she clapped her hands in joy. The people began to wonder at her joyful mood, but were not able to guess its cause. Late in the afternoon, she disclosed everything to her husband. She told him how she saw Sri Ram in Sai Baba. He thought that she was a very simple and devout woman, and her seeing Ram might be a creation of her mind. He ignored her, saying it was not possible that she alone should see Ram while they all saw Sai Baba there. She did not resent this remark, as she was fortunate enough to get Ram Darshan. Wonderful vision. Things were going on like this when the husband got a strange vision in his dream one night. He was in a big city. The police there had arrested him, tied his hands with a rope and put him in a cage. As the police were tightening the grip, he saw Sai Baba standing quiet outside near the cage. On seeing Baba so close, he said in a plaintive tone, "After hearing your fame, I resorted to your feet. Then why should a calamity befall me when you are standing here in person?" Baba said, "You must suffer the consequences of your action." He said, "I have not done anything in this life which would bring such misfortune on me." Baba said, "If not in this life, you must have committed some sin in your past life." He replied, "I do not know anything of my past life, but assuming that I did commit some sin, then why should it not be burnt and destroyed in your presence as happens to dry grass before fire?" Baba said, "Have you got such faith?" The man said, "Yes." Baba then asked him to close his eyes. No sooner did he shut them than he heard a thumping sound of something falling down. And after opening his eyes, he saw that he was free and the police fallen down bleeding. Being much frightened, he began to look at Baba, who said, "Now you are well caught. Officers will now come and arrest you." The man begged, "There is no other savior except you. Save me somehow." Then Baba again asked him to close his eyes. He did so. And when he opened them again, he saw he was free out of the cage and that Baba was by his side. He then fell at Baba's feet. Baba then asked him, "Is there any difference between this namaskar and your previous ones? Think well and then reply." The man said, "There is a lot of difference. My former namaskars were offered with the object of getting money from you, but the present namaskar is one offered to you as God. Besides, earlier I thought resentfully that you being a Muslim was spoiling us, the Hindus." Baba said, "Do you not believe in your mind in Muslim gods?" The man said, "No." Baba replied, "Have you not got a panja in your house, and do you not worship the same in Tabut, that is Muharram festival? Also, there is in your house another deity by named Kad Bibi, whom you respect and appease on marriage occasions and other festivals. Is it not so?" The man admitted all this. Then Baba said, "What more do you want?" A desire arose in his mind to get the darshan of his Guru Ram Das when Baba asked him to turn back and see. And when he turned around, lo, Ram Das was in front of him. No sooner did he bend to fall at his feet, Ram Das vanished. Then he asked Baba, "You look old. Do you know your age?" Baba said, "What? Do you say I'm old? Just race with me and see." On saying this, Baba began to run and he too followed. Baba disappeared in the dust raised by his footsteps while running, and at that moment, man was awakened. After awakening, he began to think seriously about the dream vision. His mental attitude was completely changed and he realized the greatness of Baba. After this, his doubting tendencies disappeared and pure devotion to Baba's feet descended on his mind. The vision was a mere dream, but the questions and answers therein were most significant and interesting. Next morning, when all the persons assembled in the masjid for the aarti, Baba gave him as prasad 2 rupees worth sweetmeats and also 2 rupees from his pocket and blessed him. He made him stay there for a few more days and gave him his blessing saying, "Allah will give you plenty and He will do you all good." He did not get more money there, but he got far better things, Baba's blessing, which stood him in good stead all along. The party got plenty of money later and their pilgrimage was successful as they did not suffer any trouble or inconvenience during their journey. They all returned home safe, thinking of Baba's words and blessings and the bliss they experienced by His grace. This story illustrates one of the methods that Baba followed in some cases to improve and reform his devotees. Tendulkar family. There lived in Bandra a Tendulkar family, all the members of which were devoted to Baba. Mrs. Savitri Bai Tendulkar has published a Marathi book named Sri Sainath Bhajan Mala, containing 800 abhangas and padas describing the leelas of Baba. It is a book worth reading by those who are interested in Baba. The son, Babu Tendulkar, was studying hard day and night and wanted to appear for the medical examination. He consulted some astrologers. On examining his horoscope, they told him that the stars were not favorable that year and that he should appear for the examination next year when he would be certainly successful. This cast a gloom over him and made him restless. A few days later, his mother went to Shirdi and saw Baba. Among other things, she mentioned the gloomy and morose condition of her son who was to appear for the examination in a few days. On hearing this, Baba said to her, "Tell your son to believe me, to throw aside horoscopes and predictions of astrologers and palmists and go on with his studies. Let him appear for the examination with a calm mind. He is sure to pass this year. Ask him to trust me and not to get disappointed." The mother returned home and communicated Baba's message to her son. Then he studied hard and in due course appeared for the examination. In the written papers he did well, but being overtaken by doubt, he thought that he would not secure sufficient marks for passing. So he did not care to appear for the oral examination. But the examiner was after him. He sent word through a fellow student stating that he had passed in the written examination and that he should appear for the oral. The son, being thus encouraged, appeared for the oral examination and was successful in it too. Thus, he got through the examination that year successfully by Baba's grace, although the stars were against him as indicated. It is to be noted here that doubts and difficulties surround us just to move us and confirm our faith. We are tested, as it were. If we only hold on steadily to Baba with full faith and continue our endeavor, our efforts will be ultimately crowned with success. The father of this boy, Raghunath Rao, was serving in some foreign mercantile firm in Mumbai. As he grew old, he was not able to attend to his work properly and so he had to leave and rest. As he did not improve during the period of leave, a further extension of leave or premature retirement from service was inevitable. The chief manager of the firm decided to retire him on pension as he was an old and a reliable servant. The question regarding the amount of pension to be given was under consideration. he was getting 150 rupees per month, and his pension, that is half the amount, rupees 75, would not be enough to meet the expenses of the family. So they were all anxious about this matter. 15 days before the final settlement, Baba appeared to Mrs. Tendulkar in her dream and said, "I wish that 100 rupees should be settled as pension. Will this satisfy you?" Mrs. Tendulkar replied, "Baba, why ask me this? We fully trust in you." Though Baba said 100 rupees, still he was given 10 rupees more, that is 110 rupees as a special case. Such wonderful love and care did Baba exhibit towards his bhaktas. Captain Hatte. Captain Hatte, who was staying in Bikaner, was a great devotee of Baba. Once, Baba appeared to him in his dream and said, "Did you forget me?" Hatte then immediately held Baba's feet and replied, "If a child forgets his mother, how could he be saved?" Then Hatte went into the garden and took out fresh Valpapadi vegetables, and after arranging Shiddha and Dakshina, was about to offer all of this to Baba, when he was awakened and came to know that the whole thing was a dream. He decided to send all these things to Baba at Shirdi. When he came to Gwalior some days later, he sent rupees 12 by money order to a friend with instructions that 2 rupees should be spent in buying Siddha articles and Valpapadi vegetables, and those should be offered to Baba with 10 rupees as Dakshina. The friend went to Shirdi and purchased the things mentioned, but Valpapadi was not available. In a short time, a woman turned up with a basket on her head, which curiously enough contained the Valpapadi vegetables. It was purchased, and then all the things were offered to Baba on behalf of Captain Hatte. Mr. Nimonkar prepared the naivedya of rice and Valpapadi vegetables the next day and offered the same to Baba. All the people were surprised to see that Baba, while dining, took and ate Valpapadi and did not touch rice and other things. Hatte's joy knew no bounds when he learnt this from his friend. Consecrated rupee. At another time, Captain Hatte wished that he should have in his house a rupee consecrated by Baba with his touch. He came across a friend who was bound for Shirdi. Through him, Hatte sent his rupee. The friend went to Shirdi and, after the usual salutation, gave first his dakshina, which Baba accepted. Then he gave Hatte's rupee, which Baba took in his hand and began to gaze at it. He held it in front, tossed it up with his right thumb and played with it. Then he said to the friend, "Return this to its owner with the prasad of Udi. Tell him that I want nothing from him. Ask him to live in peace and contentment." The friend returned to Gwalior, handed over the consecrated rupee to Hatte and told him all that happened at Shirdi. This time, Hatte was much pleased and realized that Baba always encouraged good thoughts and as he wished intently. Vaman Narvekar. Now, let the readers hear a different story. A gentleman named Vaman Narvekar loved Baba very much. He once brought a rupee. On one side of it were engraved the figures of Ram, Lakshman and Sita, and on the reverse side was engraved the figure of Maruti with folded hands. He offered it to Baba with a hope that he should consecrate it with his touch and return it to him with Udi. But Baba immediately pocketed it. Then Shama spoke to Baba regarding Vaman Rao's intention and requested him to return it. Then Baba spoke in the presence of Vaman Rao, "Why should it be returned to him? We should keep it ourselves. If he gives 25 rupees for it, it will be returned." Then, for the sake of that rupee, Vaman Rao collected 25 rupees and placed them before Baba. Then Baba said, "The value of that rupee far exceeds 25 rupees. Shama, take this rupee. Let us have it in our store. Keep this in your shrine and worship it." No one had the courage to ask Baba why he followed this peculiar action. He only knows what is best and most suitable to each and all. Bow to Sri Sai. Peace be to all. Chapter 30. drawn to Shirdi, Kakaji Vaidya of Vani, Ramlal Punjabi of Mumbai. In this chapter, the story of two more devotees who were drawn to Shirdi is narrated. Preliminary. Bow to the kind Sai, who is the abode of mercy and who is affectionate towards his devotees. By his mere darshan, he does away with their fear of worldly illusions and destroys the calamities. He was first Nirgun, but on account of the devotion of his bhaktas, he was obliged to take a form. To give liberation, self-realization to the bhaktas is a mission of the saints, and for Sai, the chief of them, that mission is inevitable. Those who take refuge in his feet have all their sins destroyed and their progress is certain. Remembering his feet, Brahmins from holy places come to him and read scriptures and chant the Gayatri Mantra in his presence. We who are weak and without any merits do not know what bhakti is, but we know this much, that though all others may leave us, Sai won't forsake us. Those whom he favors get enormous strength, discrimination between the unreal and the real, and knowledge. Sai knows fully the desire of his devotees and fulfills the same. Hence, they get what they want and are grateful. So we invoke him and prostrate ourselves before him. Forgetting all our faults, let him free us from all anxieties. He who, being overcome with calamities, remembers and prays Sai thus, will get his mind calmed and pacified through his grace. This Sai, the ocean of mercy, says Hemat Pant, favored him. And the result of this is a present work, Sai Satcharitra. Otherwise, what qualifications had he to undertake this enterprise? But as Sai took all the responsibility, Hemat Pant felt no burden, nor any care about this. When the powerful light of knowledge was there to inspire his speech and pen, why should he entertain any doubt or feel any anxiety? Sai got the service in the form of this book done by him. This is due to the accumulation of his merits in the past births, and therefore, he thinks himself fortunate and blessed. The following story is not a mere tale, but pure nectar. He who drinks it will realize Sai's greatness and all-pervasiveness. Those who want to argue and criticize should not go in for this. What is wanted here is not discussion, but unlimited love and devotion. Learned, devout and faithful believers, or those who consider themselves as servants of the saints, will like and appreciate these stories. Others will take them to be fables. The fortunate bhaktas of Sai will find the Sai Leelas as a kalpatru. Drinking in or devouring this nectar of Sai Leelas will give liberation to the ignorant jivas, satisfaction to the householders, and a sadhana to the aspirants. Now, we come to the story of this chapter. Kakaji Vaidya. There lived in Vani, Nasik district, a man named Kakaji Vaidya. He was the priest of the goddess Saptashringi there. He was so overpowered by adverse circumstances and calamities that he lost peace of mind and became quite restless. Under such circumstances, one evening he went into the temple of the goddess and prayed unto her from the bottom of his heart and invoked her aid to free him from anxiety. The goddess was pleased with his devotion, and the same night appeared to him in his dream and said, "You go to Baba, and then your mind will become calm and composed." Kakaji was anxious to know from her who this Baba was, but before he could get any explanation, he was awakened. Then he began to think as to who might be this Baba to whom the goddess had asked him to go. After some thinking, he resolved this Baba might be Trayambakeshwar, Lord Shiva. So he went to the holy place Trayambak in Nasik district and stayed there for 10 days. During this period, he bathed early in the morning, chanted the Rudra hymns, did the Abhishek, and did other religious rites. But with all this, he was as restless as before. Then he returned to the place and again invoked the goddess most pitifully. That night, she again appeared in his dream and said, "Why did you go to Trayambakeshwar in vain? I mean by Baba, Sri Sai Samarth of Shirdi." The question before Kakaji now was how and when to go to Shirdi and how to see Baba. If anybody is in real earnest to see a saint, not only the saint but God also fulfills his wish. In fact, the saint and the Ananth are one and the same. There is not the least difference between them. If anybody thinks that he will go on his own wish and see a saint, that will be a mere boast. Unless the saint wills it, no one is able to go and see him. Even the leaf of the tree will not move without his bidding. The more anxious a bhakta is for the visit to the saint, the more devout and faithful he is, the more speedily and effectively is his wish satisfied to his heart's content. He who invites anybody for a visit also arranges everything for his reception. And so it happened with Kakaji. Shama's vows. When Kakaji was thinking about his intended visit to Shirdi, a guest came to him at his place to take him to Shirdi. He was no other than Shama, a very close and intimate devotee of Baba. How he came to Vani at this juncture, we shall just see. Shama was severely ill when he was very young, and his mother had taken a vow to her family goddess Saptashringi at Vani that if her son got well, she would bring him and dedicate him at her feet. Then after some years, the mother herself suffered much from ringworms on her breasts. At that time, she again took another vow to her deity that if she got all right, she would offer her two silver breasts. These two vows remained unfulfilled. At her deathbed, she called her son Shama and drew his attention to the vows, and after taking a promise from him that he would fulfill them, she breathed her last. After some time, Shama forgot about these vows, and thus 30 years elapsed. About this time, a famous astrologer had come to Shirdi and stayed there for a month. His predictions in the case of Sriman Bhuti and others came true, and everybody was satisfied. Shama's younger brother, Bapaji, consulted him and was told about his mother's vows, which his elder brother had promised to fulfill at her deathbed and not yet fulfilled. Hence, the goddess was displeased with them, and that was bringing troubles on them. Bapaji told this to his brother Shama, who was then reminded of the unfulfilled vows. On thinking that any further delay would be dangerous, he called a goldsmith and got a pair of silver breasts prepared. Then he went to the masjid, prostrated himself before Baba, and placing before him the two silver breasts, requested him to accept them and free him from the vows, as to him he was his Saptashringi goddess. Then Baba insisted upon him to go himself to the temple of Saptashringi and offer them at the feet of the goddess. Thus, after taking Baba's permission and Udi, he left for Vani and, while searching for the priest, reached Kakaji's house. Kakaji was then very anxious to visit Baba, and Shama went there to see him at that very time. What a wonderful coincidence was this! Kakaji asked him who he was and where he had come from. And on learning that he had come from Shirdi, he at once embraced him. So overwhelmed was he with love. Then they talked about Sai Leelas, and after finishing the rites of Shama's vows, they both started for Shirdi. On reaching the place, Kakaji went to the masjid and fell at Baba's feet. His eyes were soon filled with tears and his mind attained calmness. According to the vision of the goddess, no sooner did he see Baba, his mind lost all its restlessness and became calm and composed. Kakaji began to think in his mind, "What a wonderful power is this." Baba spoke nothing. There was no question and answer, no benediction pronounced. The mere darshan itself was so conducive to happiness. The restlessness of my mind disappeared by his mere darshan. Consciousness of joy came upon me. This is what is called the greatness of darshan. His vision was fixed on Sai's feet, and he could utter no word. Hearing Baba's leelas, his joy knew no bounds. He surrendered himself completely to Baba, forgot his anxiety and cares and got undiluted happiness. He lived happily there for 12 days, and after taking Baba's leave, udi and blessings, he returned home.
Tune in to Sight. Spend the Day with Sai. From 6 a.m. to 9:30 p.m.
on Radio Sai's Thursday Live.
Radio Sai Thursday Live.
Stay tuned.
So, Sairam, Dr. Iyer.
Sairam,
I suppose I could call you Dr. Iyer.
Yeah, yeah.
Very good. And let me welcome you to the studios of Radio Sai.
Thank you very much.
I should say, normally when I welcome guests, I don't describe them. I just straight away start asking them questions. But in your case, if you permit me, I would like to say a word or two about you to our listeners, because your personality calls for that. If I were to tell your listeners what you look like or describe you, I would say you are a rishi wearing a doctor's dress and walking around with a stethoscope. It's very difficult for me to associate you with a doctor. You always give me the impression of a rishi. It's not just your hairstyle or anything like that, but there is a distinct spiritual aura about you, and that's not very common. I'm not trying to flatter you or anything like that, but it's a fact. I've noticed it, and I would like this listeners to know about it so that they can understand the purpose of the questions that I'm going to ask you shortly. So before we get down to those things, maybe you could tell us a little bit about yourself, where you were educated, where you were born, something that would be of general interest.
Basically, I'm of Kerala descent. That is, the parents are of Kerala descent.
Only the Keralaists who use the word Iyer. The moment you hear the word Iyer, I know you are from Kerala.
But as Swami willed it, my association with Kerala was only birth at Calicut.
I see.
And at the 6th month of age, I was transported to Bhilai, currently in Chhattisgarh.
Steel city.
Steel city. Because my father was working
there. Are you
there.
An iron man?
I'm supposed to be.
Very good.
And I grew up on the, because that is known as the rice bowl of Madhya Pradesh. It used to be known as the rice bowl of Madhya Pradesh. Mm. And I grew up on that excellent rice of Chhattisgarh.
Mm.
And I had my schooling in the steel plant schools only.
Mm-hmm.
And by Swami's grace, I had a good academic career. And at somewhere when I was in class 5,
mm-hmm.
I distinctly remember, I felt such a strong compulsion that I'll be going to medicine only.
Is there any reason why you felt that compulsion?
Right from childhood, I would say, maybe by the age of 5 years, which I can remember, anybody with, like, suppose my father had a fever or mother had a vomiting, I had this innate, I would say, instinct in me to nurse.
Mm-hmm.
At that point, I didn't know why.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't have any kind of abhorrence on cleaning wounds or dressing wounds. Mm-hmm. And this was going on, and it was taken as very naturally. But when I was in 5th, I don't know, I made up a thing that, okay, this is what excited me most, or what you say, the greatest miracle of Bhagwan on earth is a new life coming in. And I still remember, I have spent hours during the school days going to a nearby pond, sitting by the side, watching fishes, watching tadpoles. And my father used to be very mad at me because he obviously, because the kind of background we are, he expected that only you're supposed to study. And this went on till I reached 10th. I got very good marks in 10th class. And he insisted I should be appearing for my IIT, because that was his dream.
Standard parental dream, shall I say.
Yeah. Yes. So I told, look, I fully respect your decision, but personally, I don't know, I am drawn towards the biological sciences, and that's where I feel my aptitude lies. So kindly permit me to do. He said, okay, let's have a sort of compromise. Those days, we had a branch called biomaths, where you had to do both.
Do they have such things in India? I never thought they had such a thing.
They had it in our time, and I don't know. Paradoxically, the biomaths was reserved only for the top-notch students.
I see.
To me, if you ask me, it's a very foolish concept because by the time you are in 11th, you should have decided where you want to go. I had no choice. I had to satisfy my parents, so I went there. 11th, when I finished, I got very good marks in 11th class. Father insisted I should appear for the IIT. Mm-hmm. I said, don't worry, I'll appear next year.
Mm-hmm.
So I could buy one more year's time. I finished my 12th, I got very good. My 12th was the CBSE board exam. Mm-hmm. I got the highest in biology in the school, 90%. And I had the distinction of getting the highest ever in English language, which was for a science student getting 82% marks in English, was like a rarity.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll get very good marks in the science subjects. English you'll get around 60-65, that's all. On the strength of which I was awarded the Mahatma Gandhi Memorial Scholarship for pursuing higher education.
Mm-hmm.
And I appeared for my medical entrance. Meanwhile, I didn't appear for IIT, of course, with due apologies to my father.
Mm-hmm.
But I got call from the Regional Engineering College.
Mm-hmm.
I somehow persuaded him that please don't force me to go there. And I landed up in my medicine. I did my MBBS at Raipur Medical College. Academic career-wise, it was reasonably good.
Rather interesting, when I was young, there was no IIT at that time. They came much later, but somehow I was sort of pushed into engineering by my father in the Indian Institute of Science. That is a postgraduate degree, diploma they used to give in those days. But my heart was in pure science. And after 1 year, my father gave me liberation and I went to Boston to pure science. So, we have had similar kind of experiences in the past. Carry on, please.
I also basically was a pure sciences man. But mm-hmm. then, you know, the compulsion of having a career and more so, for whatever reason, any kind of a suffering right from my childhood, it used to sort of stimulate in me a desire. Can I do something to alleviate the suffering?
Okay, you had an innate sense of service. Now, this is very interesting. I'll come to that in a minute, but before that, I want to pick up on one of the remarks you made very casually, almost in passing, that you were excited by the coming of life.
Yes.
I was reminded of a phrase that occurs in Devi Bhagavatam. It says, one of the greatest miracles is bones growing within a woman.
Yes.
And I was really deeply struck by it, because normally, as you know, when bone breaks, it is very hard for it to grow. And here an entire skeleton grows within a human being. That was described as a very great miracle in Devi Bhagavatam. And I was really amazed to see the depth of their perception. It's really wonderful.
Exactly. See, what I mean to say, today modern science, now my children are studying the same in Bhagavan's school. So when I go through their books, I remember my days when they started off with describing the one-celled amoeba, and then you go on to various classes, classifications, till you reach the mammals. That was the stage one. Then I get a chance to enter medical field. In fact, very interesting, it may be interesting to listeners. The day I was going to join medical college, my father asked me, shall I accompany you to the college? I said, are people will make fun, don't do that. I am a grown-up, I am 18 years. No, not that. Because you go there, first year medicine, you have to dissect dead bodies. So if you get scared or anything, for that, shall I accompany you? I said, I don't think I should get scared. Still, he was, after all, his father. He said, if you happen to have any such emotions, kindly come back immediately. Don't get upset. So anyway, I went there and we were, after the first or second day, we were ushered into the anatomy dissection hall, where you had around 7 tables, each table with one preserved cadaver for dissection. And there is where we had our first lessons in human anatomy. I did, of course, see the experience of many of my classmates, some of whom who refused to eat food for a number of days, some of whom who had sleepless nights. But I never had any such kind of a fear, because to me it was the greatest mystery which has been unraveled before me. Maybe I was seeing it, studying it on a dead body, but still it was the greatest mystery. If, you know, we have, you may be aware, the MBBS is divided.
In fact, now that you mention it, I should mention two things for our own benefit and reminder as well as that of the listeners. One is, the way Lord Krishna describes the human power in the Gita, I believe in the 10th chapter, if I'm not mistaken. Swami also says that the human body is the most wonderful machine in creation, and it far exceeds anything that was built by man. It's, of course, you will agree with that
statement. I'll agree 100%, sir.
200%.
Because I have witnessed both. See, today if you ask me, you may be aware the medical curriculum in this country is divided into three sections. Preclinical, paraclinical and clinical. The once, and for me, the greatest excitement was when I entered the clinical, because I could see cases, I could examine cases, I could see their progress. That was the excitement part of it. Till when I was in my final MBBS, we had postings in obstetrics and gynecology. Now, surprisingly, there was, at least in the college where I studied, there was a strange kind of an inertia amongst boys going for the postings in obstetrics gynecology. I was the lone exception in my batch. I used to go. So one of the female residents, the postgraduate there, she commented, up till now, no boys used to come. Why are you coming? I said, well, it's a part of the curriculum. And we are supposed to witness 20 deliveries and prepare a record of it. That, she said, no problem. You see the register and note down the date and time and the deliveries and say, and I'll sign on it. I said, I don't want that. I want to see, I want to learn. So she was a little bit not very happy. She said, okay, you come, because daytime the college will be there. Come after night, 8 p.m. So one night I went. She was there on duty. And a lady was in labor. This was my first witness of a human birth. Till then, there was a imagination, you had seen books, you had seen. I went there. It was a normal labor, it was progressing. The head came out. What we call in medical terms as the crowning. The head comes out. Once the crowning takes place, in the next 15 to 20 seconds, the remaining body should come out. Here, the body didn't come out. And this lady, who is a postgraduate in gynecology, she's struggling and she's telling the young lady, you please strain, you have to bring out, otherwise the baby will choke to death, please strain. And whatever is happening, the baby is not coming out. At that point in time, I don't know, because I was just a student. I have not yet passed my MBBS. I was just a student. I don't know what came into my brain. It was definitely an extracorporeal force. I won't say it's intelligence. It's an extracorporeal force. I wasn't wearing any glove or anything because I was supposed to just stand and watch. I just brushed her hand aside, insinuate my hand beneath the chin of the child, put my naked finger, right, an ungloved hand, and there was the cord lying around the neck. I just brought it out and the baby slipped out. And it all of it happened in about 10 seconds.
Literally, you saved the baby's life.
Yes, the child was born alive. And the moment the baby came, it was started crying. Anyway, that was over. The cord was cut and the baby was bathed. It was examined. Luckily, the baby was 100% safe. Then I had a tough time. This resident came and she started firing me. All this time, you have bluffed to me that you have never attended what we call the conduction duty. Labor duty, the conduction duty. How did you do it? I said, look, there is no way I can prove that I am correct. But if you believe me that I am telling the truth, this is the first ever time I have seen. She said, how could you recognize that there was a cord around the neck? The umbilical cord had wound around the neck. Had you attempted to pull like that, the baby would have got strangulated to death. I said, kindly don't ask me that question. Even I am surprised how this thought came to my mind.
I suppose it was the destiny that steered you to save the life of that child. That child was destined to live and you were the instrumentality.
That is one way of looking at it.
Yes.
What I say is, today in medical science, I am now almost 20 years in this field now. Now when I look back, this is just one example which I say is the beginning. I have numerous such. All such instances when the correct thing struck your brain at the correct time and a life got saved, each of it was the proof of divinity of Bhagwan.
Exactly, that's what I'm saying. You see, the divine has used you as the instrument to save that life. Okay, now I want to come back to another point and make a passing reference because we have so many interesting things to discuss. Your perception of medicine as a field of service, what strikes me there is something that happened to me many years ago. I was in a place called Kalpakkam where we had an atomic energy research center. And there was a school there, And I used to be closely connected with the school for a number of reasons, including the fact that my son was studying there. And I went there in 1973, first time. And I used to ask the children, what would you like to be when you grow big, become big? They would all say, oh, I want to become a doctor. Why a doctor? I want to serve the country and all that. This was all the way up to 12th standard. A few years later, after 10th standard, there was no desire to become a doctor and go to villages. They said, I want to become an engineer and go off to America. Some more years, after 8th standard, the evaporation to disappeared. After a few more years, after 5th standard, the evaporation to serve disappeared. What I'm trying to say is, children instinctively knew that medical profession was a profession of service. But unfortunately, our ambience got so corrupted that they got diverted away from service.
That's a sad fact, sir.
That's a sad fact. Today, I don't think anybody looks upon the medical profession as a profession of service at all.
See, all said and done, when Bhagwan stated long back that education and health should be
free,
it should not be an object of commerce. That is what Bhagwan meant. By free meaning, of course, there will be setups wherein you may, because of the inputs, cost inputs, you may have to charge. But it should not be a commercial dealing.
In fact, he made one very strong statement in a summer course. He said, today, these professional educations, especially that of medicine, has become so expensive that after they graduate, the doctors think all the time of recouping the money that they have spent. So they become extremely money-oriented.
Yes.
And this is the reason why nexus between jobs, money and education should be broken. That is what he said. Now, coming to something, I want to know a little bit about your spiritual background and the way it influenced your professional outlook, if at all. I presume it has. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your spiritual background?
At the age of 13, mm-hmm. due to compulsions of the origin by birth, I was initiated into the sacred thread.
Okay.
At that point in time, I asked my aunt, I happened to be the only son and the only grandson also at that time. So I happened to ask my father as well as my grandfather, okay, why are you making me go through all these things? So I was just keep your mouth shut. This is what we have been doing through generations. You are also supposed to undergo that. I said, fine. Okay. I don't mind. I underwent through that because there was a compulsion. But to me, always that remained. Because possibly one day when my grandfather was not in a good mood, I asked him rather persistently, why should I go through all these things of a little bit torturing my hair and keeping a tough hair and all those things, wearing a loincloth and going for a symbolic begging. I said, to me it looks strange. So he said, don't talk all those things. You are born in a Brahmin family, you are supposed to undergo that.
Don't I know that.
No, that I think... It, the first time, you see, I was 13 years of age. I was on the threshold of the adolescence. I was slowly developing independent thinking. It sowed the seed for, he said, you are a Brahmin, you have to do it. Now, I told you from the beginning, I had a leaning towards the science. Could birth determine Brahminism? This was the next question, which came to my mind. Two, are there genes which determine Brahminism? Because I was primarily, because I told you from the beginning, I was a natural sciences man. So these are the questions to which I can't ask anybody, can't get an answer. But they remained questions. I went to medical college. I was dutifully doing my Sandhya Vandana. I was doing my Gayatri Japa and all. But let me be very honest to you and all the listeners that all those years, it was a mere mechanical ritual rather than my understanding it. Luckily, one good friend of my father, it was a practice, you may be aware of it, that once you are put in the thread, any elder comes, you are supposed to tell the Abhivade mantra and touch the feet. He gifted me a book called Sandhya Vandana with the Sanskrit verses and English translation, costing 2 rupees, published by Bharati Vidya Bhavan, authored by P. Seshadri. Now, this P. Seshadri here happened to be a distant relative of my father. To date, amongst the few books which have really influenced me, one was this book. I went carefully through all the mantras, studied their meaning. And the last before the namaskara you do, that last when I was reading that, it thrilled me at that age. Akashat patitam toyam sagaram pratigacchati sarva deva namaskaram sri kesham pratigacchati. Even today, 1976, June 2nd, my Upanayanam was held.
Mm.
Even today, many a times, that is the essence of Advaita, ultimate. And such a beautiful symbolism they could draw at that point in time, that water falling anywhere in the earth, final destination is the ocean. Similarly, whatever form of God or Godhead you are offering your salutations, your prostrations, it's going to only one supreme absolute. So that was my, you can say, the first spiritual baptism. But it didn't progress further because I didn't have anybody to exchange notes with. Somewhere in the medical college, I did go through what is known as a lot of spiritual crisis. There was a vacuum, there was an emptiness. I wanted to go to medical field. I got the field, I was seeing patients, I could serve them, but still the emptiness remained. I had seen birth, I had seen deaths also.
What kind of emptiness was it?
At that point in time, I could not describe, I could not explain.
Mm-hmm.
I used to question myself. Look, I wanted to come to medicine. I defied even my
father. Something was still missing.
Still missing.
Did you try to fill that emptiness with something?
I was doing my regular Sandhya Vandana.
No, that's all right. But did you try to read something else?
Yes.
Or go after some gurus or anything like that?
Gurus, the biggest problem, as I told you, I came from a very strict background.
Mm.
So the strict order was, now that you entered medicine, till you pass out of medicine, no running around gurus and all those business.
Okay, you are banned from gurus.
Gurus. But
right.
I have a very interesting episode for here.
Mm.
1983,
mm-hmm.
I finished my first MBBS.
Mm-hmm.
And I was in very dire straits. It was this thing which was troubling me. I had read about Bhagavan. I had read, then, for the first book was when I was in primary school, I had read the Howard Murfitt's Man of Miracles. But then, beyond that, and the first issue of the magazine called Sunday,
mm-hmm.
Amrita Bazar Patrika Group from Calcutta,
mm-hmm.
the first
mm-hmm.
issue,
mm-hmm.
the cover was Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
And I had cut the cover, and that adorned the bedroom in our house for many, many, many years.
Mm-hmm.
So that the moment I get up, I see. Now you may ask me, why was I drawn? I have no answer.
Mm-hmm.
I was drawn to the...
You are drawn because you are destined to be drawn.
Agree. That is, I realize, no. But at that, I am talking, the Ramnath who was there at that point in time, didn't realize this.
Mm-hmm.
And 83, I finished my exam. Month of May, my parents are supposed to go to Bombay to attend the threat ceremony of my cousins. I don't know, of all the things I told my father, I don't know, I am not feeling at ease. Why don't you do one thing? I come to know that in summers, Bhagavan is there at Whitefield, Bangalore.
Mm.
I'll go, I'll just have a darshan and I'll join you in Kerala. My father got very angry. He said, what nonsense, you have gone for medicine, you want to run around and chase gurus and babas and all, you come along with us to Bombay.
Mm.
Fine, I had no alternative, I accompanied.
Mm.
You will be surprised, sir, today, even now when I say I get goose pimples.
Mm.
I reach Bombay,
mm.
and we are staying in my mother's elder sister's house, they stay at Sion.
Mm-hmm.
And we reach there. Few hours after reaching, that my aunt, she tells me, hey, I have something to tell you. I said, please. She happened to be a widow. She had three children and she told me, hey, tomorrow Sathya Sai Baba is coming to Andheri. Can you accompany me? Now imagine what would be the feelings which would have gone through my mind when she tells me this. When just couple of weeks back, I have had a very strong argument with my father at home.
So he drew you to him,
yes.
In spite of
so-called
fantastic.
That. Then, same again I went through. I went to Andheri, had Bhagwan's darshan within a distance of 3 to 4 feet. Now, don't ask me at that point. Simply, I had the darshan, I was thrilled. That's all.
Hmm. Came naturally. See, if the heart is pure, it resonates immediately. Okay. That's very important.
And I came out. I pursued my second MBBS. Final MBBS, I again entered into a vacuum.
Hmm.
The same thing. During the second MBBS, my teacher and whom I would call my first guru, he was a PhD in zoology, very excellent in spirituality, in yoga, in Ayurveda. He is the one who gave me all those legacies. He told me, hey, Ramnath, book laya hun.
Mm.
I brought a book. It's a must read for you.
Mm.
That was the book, Autobiography Yogi by Paramahamsa Yogananda.
Mm, famous book.
So I told, look, sir, this must, some sadhu sannyasi must have written things. Why do you want me to waste time?
Mm.
He said, look, I am not asking you to buy it or anything.
Mm.
I have bought it. Kindly go through it. If you feel it's useless, return it back tomorrow morning. I think that was the first ever time in my life that from 10 p.m. to 4:30 a.m. in the morning, cover to cover, I finished one book. And even today, that book happens to be an addiction, because that was the true spiritual baptism for me. That was where the inquiry started. Yeah. And as I told you, I had many unanswered questions.
From yearning, you went to inquiry.
Inquiry. Yeah. And the answers came by themselves, not by any discussion. Who is a Brahmin? What is a Brahmin? It is not by birth. It is by karma. I didn't get it through books. These are all coming.
By the way, suppose you know that this question was asked of Yudhishthira in the Kshatriya Pariksha.
Yes, but I read it much later.
That's true. But this is an old question.
Yes.
It's an old question. And the answer is also old. Only thing is, we don't know the answer.
Yes.
But for the benefit of the listeners, you may explain what the question is and what the answer is.
No, what I'm going to dwell upon is how, when the inquiry is sincere, the answers do get implanted in the brain. This answer came to me. I said, yes.
The long and short of it, as Swami says, is a brahmachari is one who is immersed in Brahman.
Yes, I agree.
And he says, don't define a brahmachari as an unmarried physical bachelor. That's not a brahmachari. A man may be married, man may be a sannyasi, man may be anything. If he is immersed in Brahman, he is a brahmachari.
Yes.
Period.
So then a definition came into my brain, which I even know, quote, when I talk to some of my friends. Any individual who strives for, in all his activities, all his living duration, to attain or know Brahman, he is a Brahmin. Which means, if you extend it, you can have a Christian by faith who is a Brahmin, you can have a Muslim by faith who is a Brahmin. Brahminism
absolutely
is,
it's a philosophy.
And this insight came. It's a different story that later on when I fell, I went through, I bought, when I started getting my internship money, 80% of the money I burnt off in books. Ramakrishna Paramahamsa, Swami Sivananji, Swami Vivekananji, and it was going on. And
what about Ramana?
Ramana Maharshi joined later on, no doubt about it, and still continues to be an all-time favorite. And all said and done, in spite of going all those things, there was this yearning that I should have my own experience. This is okay based on what they said. I should know it for myself. And how that thing came was...
Know what? You say I should know it myself.
Yeah.
What is it?
People talk of divinity. People talk of superpower. People talk of supreme power. Supreme absolute.
Yes, yes.
Brahman.
Yes, yes.
Yes, it's very easy. I can give a 1 hour lecture.
Yes, absolutely.
But the question is, do I realize that today Swamiji is there in physical form, in flesh and blood before us? But the moment he comes in front of us, are we still aware that here is a divinity absolute standing in front of us? The moment he comes and asks me, how are you? The moment you feel that, oh, he is just... And I always, my prayer to him has been, Bhagavan, kindly don't put that veil of Maya on me. I never for a moment should I ever get covered by that delusion and forget who you actually are. That has been my prayer always. And today, by His grace, when an emergency case comes, when I am dealing with it, I dissociate myself from it. I just hand over. And when...
Okay, this is what I think I should talk to you about, because that brings spirituality and medicine together. What I would like to ask you is the following. How has this quest for Brahman, this yearning to know Brahman, shall I put it that way, influenced your professional life? I have talked to many doctors sitting here in this very studio, and of course for them Brahman was Swami, because they don't have a Vedantic background, but Brahman is Swami and Swami is Brahman, as we know. And they have told me and described to me many experiences wherein their spiritual yearning, etc., translated into actions related to their profession. So can you tell us something of a similar nature concerning yourself?
Definitely.
Please.
See, I told you, I had seen birth.
Yes.
I conducted so many deliveries during my internship. Then came a stage wherein, when I became a little bit more senior, I was pursuing my post-graduation. I had to certify deaths. Now, this was a sort of a conflict going on inside. On one hand, you are reading tomes and tomes, weighing tons, and you feel that you can save anybody on the earth. And on the other, you find that in spite of the best of the efforts, few cases die. And this initially was very painful for me. But I didn't have an answer at that point in time. I used to ask my professors, and oh, that's okay. That's part of life. You can't be saving everybody who walks in. Difficult. I passed my post-graduation. I joined the, you may be aware, the Bhilai Steel Plant had an 850-bedded hospital, huge hospital. It's an industrial hospital catering to 60,000 employees and their families. I grew up seeing, going to the hospital to see patients, means colleagues of my father who were admitted there. I used to go and carrying some tiffin or something. And I have, there were many moments, many evenings which I have gone with my father standing outside that foreboding intensive care unit door with that, what I call the blackboard, with that six or seven names put and four columns are there. DIL, dangerously illisted, critical, serious, improving. And mechanically, a nurse will come after every duty changeover. She'll rub that tick mark and a dangerously listed may go to serious or critical.
Rewrite the scoreboard
and go. I have seen this as a schoolboy. I grew up with it. And see the divine hand. I find myself in 1990. I am on the other side of the ICU door. I am the ICU duty doctor. So when that point in there was a flood wave of emotions. When I said, oh, look, I have grown up in this very place, seeing the emotions of people who are gathered outside, what is going through them, what is happening in their minds, thinking about their kith and kin inside, because they are very strict. Nobody is allowed inside the ICU. And today, here, I am the duty doctor of the ICU. And everything depends, means they have put the trust on me. So that brought about a sense of, what you call, a sense of extreme caution and a sense of extreme alertness in dealing with every case, number one. Number two, you know it's an industrial hospital, it's intensive care. Very bad cases used to come. Deaths used to occur. That was when the most fundamental question came into the brain. In spite of the same amount of dedication and input and care put in for management of two similarly matched patients. One survives, one dies. Why? Medical science could not give a plausible scientific answer. That is when slowly, but I agree it's very difficult, but all, because always that the demon ego surfaces. No, the moment you have 10 successes, these 10 cases, I manage the infarction, they survived and went. What about the other 4 cases which also you manage and they died? What went wrong there? That was the first beginning of the realization that we are mere players in this drama.
That's the word I was going to come to. So you actually hit upon that.
We are the mere players in the drama.
So shall I put it this way, that your professional experience combined with your spiritual background helped you to realize that we are instruments in the hands of God. Actually, people say, please God, make me a good instrument. I laugh at this prayer because everybody is an instrument in the hands of God. Only the knowledgeable people realize it. Others are ego-driven. They think they are not instruments in anybody's hands.
I agree with you 100%.
But your background and your sense of service and your sense of inquiry made you realize that we are just instruments.
Absolutely.
Destiny decides. As Krishna says in the 11th chapter, I have decided what's going to happen. Here's your chance. Take it or leave it.
That's all. See, in 1986, when Jayendra Saraswati Swamiji, the Shankaracharya of Kanchipuram, he came to Bhilai. 3 days, I was put as his sort of personal attendant because I was a local man. And I was doing my internship. So, and biting cold, December 5th, 6th and 7th in Bhilai with 6 and 7 degrees temperature. Topless, you have to stand outside the door of his room from morning 4:30 to night 11 o'clock. Because I know the local people, so many people. I was curiously watching this Swamiji. So many dignitaries coming, so many ordinary devotees coming. Suddenly he will say, you come tomorrow at 10 a.m. 10 a.m. that man comes, he takes him inside, initiates him to some mantra, gives him some shaligrama or a shivalinga and sling. Let me make it. I had this yearning. In the pursuit, I have read so many books on about how to understand the Shakti and so many things I have done. So last day, I picked up my courage and said, Swamiji, if you pardon me, I want to ask some questions. Yeah, please go ahead, he said. I said, in what way am I not having all those credentials which all the others are having not to have a mantra initiation from you. Even I also wish to pursue. So he laughed. He said, there is no need for any mantra for you. What apparently you have selected as your profession, this will ultimately lead you to mukti. At that point in time, to me, it sounded very absurd. What is this man telling? I asked him for a mantra and he's telling me this, that your profession, I am a medical line dealing with patient and disease and death. It is going to lead me to mukti. I didn't realize this because possibly my perception was not mature enough to understand. Mm-hmm. That same evening, he gave a discourse on Viveka Chudamani to the local population. Mm-hmm. At the end of it, he called me and says, handed me a small pamphlet. Mm. He said, this is 1986, mind you. Mm. And it was a small pamphlet in English about some Hindu mission hospital at Trichinopoly and about some request for some donations. He said, you translate it in Hindi and tell this audience. Mm. There itself. So I took the pamphlet, read it, immediately translated in Hindi. Mm. Because I had a good command on Hindi being
naturally in Madhya Pradesh.
I translated and ended it. After that, as is customary, I prostrated. Mm. Moment I prostrated and got up, he said, if you permit me, I'll use the Tamil and translate it in English. Koncham varsham kadinje. Unakku indha maari oru hospital dhaan vela paarkanum. After some years, you will also be working in a similar hospital. That was a charitable hospital, mind you. So I said, what is this man? Of all things, he's telling that I'll be working in a charitable hospital and where possibly my parents were building dreams that this man will be in a corporate hospital with a Mercedes-Benz and all. And you will not believe, I came to Super Speciality Hospital on August 1st, 1993. Mm. The moment I entered, my wife was with me, my father was with me. This same incident came into my mind. This hospital, this temple of healing created by Bhagavan is the ultimate in charity. So when I landed here, and you'll be surprised, my appointment was a contract for 1 year.
Hmm.
My wife was very much scared because what will one year? I said, fine. The Lord who has brought us here, He will see to it that we don't starve. At the end of 1 year, we'll think.
Hmm.
And 6 months after, one fine day, a new order comes telling that your original order is cancelled. We'll treat the 1 year as a probationary period, and on completion, we'll regularize it.
Very good. Now, coming to something which all our listeners like to hear, have you had any interesting medical experiences where you have directly felt the presence of Swami?
First sentence I would like to say is that to me, every moment when I deal with a patient is definitely a miracle of Swami. Of course, people will say, what's so great about it? It's normal human nature or tendency that people like sensational events.
Right.
Yes. And I have a good share of them. Only thing is...
No, but I would like to compliment you on your first remark. I think that is an extraordinarily profound and important remark. And I'm glad you made it. Its value is not understood. People like only these sensational experiences. They don't realize that everything is...
Even treating a common cold and cough is equally
but
sensational.
But now coming to what I call the sensational stories, our listeners like to hear them. So maybe one or two you could tell us.
Yes, if you could permit me, there are quite a few. But at least two.
We'll take them one at a time. So we'll get you back later for more stories. So let's have one of them.
One of them is because it involves a very, very great personality of this country, who incidentally happens to be in the staff of our hospital also, revered as the father of urology of this country, Professor.
You're referring to Dr. Butt.
Professor H.S. Butt.
Uh-huh.
The grand, we call him the Bhishma Pitama in the hospital. And in fact, for all of us, he is a grandfather figure. And we go to him irrespective of his attachment to urology for any of the medical doubts we have. Professor Butt walks in at 11:30 a.m. To the chamber where I am sitting. And in his usual jocular self comes and tells me, last night I had some kind of a discomfort. Anyway, I thought must be some stomach upset. So today morning I came and told your department chief, why don't you do an ECG and echo for me? He said, sir, I'm a little bit busy now. If you don't mind, why can't you come around 11:30? So I came, I found that man is not there in the room. So I decided to come to your room. I said, fine, sir. Now, professor, but many a times like this has come to me, the person concerned, me itself. And he'll come and tell like this. I'll go along with him, take his ECG, take his echo. Every time I'll say, sir, everything is fine by Bhagwan's grace. You are really fit like a fiddle. And he'll go laughing, cracking some jokes. This time I went along with him, took the ECG. My heart sank. He had features in the ECG of an extensive damage to the heart.
My God.
Number one. Number two, at that point in time, I am in a conflict. How to reveal this to him? Here is a man who is revered almost like a godlike figure in medicine, and here I am just...
But the funny thing is, he himself felt something was wrong with him.
He had some kind of a...
Gut feeling.
Gut feeling, no. Because like this, see, it becomes a routine, no? Once in 6 months, he'll come, hey, Tambi, why don't you...
No, that's true, but that's not for a checkup. He was feeling uneasy.
Uneasy the previous night.
Not at that time.
So he thought, why not I have a checkup?
Okay.
It lasted for a very short duration. He himself said, as per his history. When I saw that, then I told, sir, I have to know how to break it to him. He's a medical man, much senior than me. Anyway, somehow I managed to bring him to the echo room. The echo confirms the territories where the damage has occurred. This one confirmed it. Because the person concerned doing the echo was the same who had done it many times in the past also. So now we had to move him immediately, urgently to the critical care unit. The biggest problem was to break it to Professor Bhatt and to convince him that he has to sit on a wheelchair and go to the critical care unit. So he said...
He had come walking into
the room. He walked into the room. And then I told, sir, I think we'll have to observe you a bit, if you don't mind. We'll just take you to the CCU and just watch. Why, is it something alarming? In his usual.
Sir, blunt and direct.
I said, it's not a question of alarming, sir. You are our most revered senior and you came with some complaints. And there are some, because I can't make him upset at that point in time. So I thought it is better and prudent. Okay, fine, come, let's walk along to the CCU. I literally fell at his feet. I said, sir, for God's sake, don't do that. Be seated. He refused. Finally, we have one Mr. Anil Patle, one of Swami's students who happens to work with us. He's a senior technical officer in cardiology. I called him. But sir has got a special soft corner for him. I said, look, Patle, this is the problem. You please convince, we all reverentially and lovingly call him Bhatt Tata, you granddad of the hospital. You please convince Bhatt Tata. I came out, I rang up the CCU, I told my chief, such and such thing, this is the finding, please keep everything ready. Because he has literally, it's like minutes are ticking off and the time bomb will go off any time. He has come with that much damage.
My God.
Somehow we convince him.
This was how many years ago? 3 years ago.
3 years ago. And I am on, that is precisely in the month of August 2000, when I have a fracture on my left leg. I am on a plaster cast. With the plaster cast, I wheeled Professor Bhatt, went up. We put him on the bed, hooked up to the monitor and all. When I am moving him on the wheelchair, he made one statement. Okay, Dr. Iyer, whatever it is, you do whatever you want. But, see, it's already 11:45. Mrs. Bhatt will be waiting for me for the lunch. So, see to it how you tell it. See his concern at that point in time.
But he had sensed it.
Obviously,
he knows what's going on.
What's going on, though we may not put it in words, he was aware of it. We took him, put there. Meanwhile, what happened was, you see, Bhatt sir is, as I told, he's almost like a godlike figure. The news flies fast. Somehow somebody told Mrs. Bhatt, and by the time he's put on the bed, Mrs. Bhatt is right there in the CCU. Anyway, he was fully conscious. His vital parameters were stable by Swami's grace. Message was somehow sent to Bhagwan. And you will not believe, sir, within 35-40 minutes, Bhagwan is at bedside of Professor Bhatt.
I remember that day very well. We were all waiting for darshan and Swami didn't come for a long time, 1 hour late.
He's at the bedside and he comes and in chaste Tamil, he tells first question he asks Bhagwan in chaste Tamil, he's asking Mrs. Bhatt. He didn't talk to Professor Bhatt. He asked, did you inform your children? She said, yes. Who asked you to inform? Precisely to prevent you from doing that only, I came running to see.
Swami is very particular about that.
Then he asked, did you inform Guru, who incidentally happens to be their first son who is in Canada? She said, no, don't inform him. I am there, I'll take care. Swamiji sat, metilized some vibhuti, gave to Professor Bhatt and told everything will be fine, don't worry. came out, told to us, doctor said, just give him medicines. Don't ever toy with the idea of angiogram and surgery and all. Mind you, this is coming from Bhagwan.
Mm-hmm.
Fine. Bhagwan meant it. And while he was moving out of the CC, he said, don't discharge him till I tell. But sir recovered.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed with us for almost 2 months.
I remember, I used to visit him.
For almost 2 months. Now, herein, of course, with due apologies, my scientific curiosity, this man, the age of 80 years, comes with such an extensive heart attack.
Mm-hmm.
And because of his age, we couldn't do anything aggressive. We just gave the routine medicines, and this man is fine. I couldn't resist my temptation, so I said I should see some serial electrocardiograms. Mm-hmm. I should see the echo also. And let me tell you, this is 2003, it's almost 3 years complete, it was around month of August.
Mm.
I have been following up on his ECGs and echo. Mm. They are absolutely normal. And you are also seeing him every day in the darshan.
Absolutely.
Now, to me, from the medical point of view, at that age, with such an extensive damage, with no trace of damage currently present, in the absence of any kind of our so-called professed medications or interventions, what more you want? This is just one. I have a whole stock of it. Sometimes I joke with my wife that maybe if I chronicle it, maybe I can publish it as a book. Because each one of these is a challenge to our so-called false superiority or sense of false pride, which we feel that, oh, we are the ultimate. I have done 2,000 angioplasties or 4,000 valvuloplasties. It's nonsense.
Absolute nonsense.
It's nonsense. And one word, if you kindly permit me to say, I always had a clash with this karma theory. Always had a clash. By reading so many books, I came across a very beautiful term called Rinanubandhan. And today I have come to accept that whatever kind of interactions I have with a patient X or a patient Y who gets benefit by way of a service utilizing these hands is a pure Rinanubandhan which I have with him. With Bhagwan being the puppeteer, we being the puppets, he plays the strings. He just brings the two people together who have a Rinanubandhan, sees to it that the thing is done. And most importantly, what I find is, all those instances wherein we could approach a patient with a sense of total surrender, things went off very well. All instances wherein the tiny bit of the pride or ego cropped in, always you were faced with problems.
I will wrap it up with recall of a story that Swami says regarding ego and surrender. I think they refer to Sant Ramdas, if I'm not mistaken. He had written the story of Lord Rama and palm leaves. And someday, I don't know whether it was wife or something, usually wives get mad at this kind of sage husbands. All these palm leaves were thrown into the river. And then many of the leaves sank. 90% of them sank. Only 10% survived. And he cried, oh, I did so much, I wrote, everything is gone. But at least I've got these things left. When he went and looked at what was left, he found that all those things that sank were poems or hymns that were written with ego. They drowned. And these were written in the spirit of surrender. And they alone survived. This is a story I heard Swami narrate. And I think the sum and substance of what you have been telling us portrays very effectively the sense of karma yoga. When the acharya told you don't need any mantra, the thought that came to my mind was, he was telling me, I've already been given the upadesham of karma yoga. Where is the need to give you another mantra? Is there a better mantra than karma yoga? And the interesting point about your narration was that you are not just a robotic karma yogi. You are an inquiring karma yogi. So there was an aspect of you that had devotion, the way you described Swami, for example. And there was also an aspect of you that one associates with the jignasu, the seeker. So in your narration, as you were speaking, I was able to see the three steps which form the essence of the Bhagavad Gita. Work to worship to wisdom. Karma to bhakti to jnana. And you have very beautifully captured for us the essence of all these three steps to divinity, and how they can be become a part of our normal life, so that life itself becomes spiritualized. I think at this point I must extend to you an invitation to come to us again and again and again and tell more of those fund of stories that you have a stock of, because I am quite sure our listeners are going to pester me for more and more of them. So let me thank you and express the hope that you will be with us again sometime when your duty permits you the leisure. Sai Ram.
Jai Sai Ram.
Sai Ram.
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सद्गुरु साई ध्यान करो
सोहम सोहम ध्यान करो सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम ब्रह्मा सोहम विष्णु
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम साई ध्यान करो
सोहम आत्मा शिव परमात्मा
ब्रह्मानंद से हृदय भरो
ब्रह्मा हृदय भरो सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे सद्गुरु ब्रह्म सनातन हे परम दया घन पावन हे परम दया घन पावन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे जन्म ज दुख विनाशन हे
श्री गुरु प्रति वासा विष्णु महेश
Shama Gopala,
Shama Gopala,
साई गोपाला गिरिधर बाला हे नंदलाला देवकी नंदन श्याम गोपाला गिरिधर बाला हे नंदलाला केशव माधव श्याम गोपाला साई गोपाला गिरिधर बाला हे नंदलाला।